Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, The Creative Impetus, Chapter 4, The Characteristics of Rishabh Dev, text number 5. This is prose, so I'll just read this. Viditanuragam Apora prakriti janapado raja nabhir atmajam samayasetu rakshayam abhishitya brahmaneshu panidhyaya saha merudevya vishalayam prasana nipunena tapasa samadhi yogena nara narayanakyam bhagavantam vasudevam upasina kalena tan mahimanam avapa. Vidita. Known very well. Anuragam. Popularity. Apora prakriti. Among all the citizens and government officers. Janapadaha. Desiring to serve the people in general. Raja, the king. Nabhihi, Nabhi, Atmajam, his son. Samayasetu Rakshayam, to protect the people strictly according to the Vedic principles of religious life. Abhishitya, enthroning. Brahmaneshu, to the learned Brahmanas. Upanidaya, entrusting. Saha, with. Merudevya, his wife. Merudevi, Vishalayam, in Badrikashram. Prasanani Punena, performed with great satisfaction and expertise. Tapasa, by austerities and penances. Samadhi yogena, by full samadhi. Naranarayanakyam, named Naranarayan. Bhagavantam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudevam, Krishna. Upasina, worshipping. Kalena, in due course of time. Tat Mahimanam, his glorious abode. The spiritual world of Vaikuntha. Avapa, achieved. King Nabhi understood that his son Rishabh Dev was very popular among the citizens and among government officers and ministers. Understanding the popularity of his son, Maharaj Nabhi enthroned him as the emperor of the world to give protection to the general populace in terms of the Vedic religious system. To do this, he entrusted him into the hands of learned Brahmanas who would guide him in administering the government. Then Maharaj Nabi and his wife, Marudevi, went to Badrikashram in the Himalaya mountains, where the king engaged himself very expertly in austerities and penances with great jubilation. In full samadhi, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Naranarayana, who is Krishna in his plenary expansion. By doing so, in course of time, Maharaj Nabi was elevated to the spiritual world known as Vaikuntha. Prasana Nupe, Prasana Nipunena. Purport. When Maharaj Nabi saw that his son Rishabh Dev was popular with the general populace and the governmental servants, he chose to install him on the imperial throne. In addition, he wanted to entrust his son into the hands of the learned brahmanas. This means that a monarch was supposed to govern strictly according to Vedic principles under the guidance of learned brahmanas, who could advise him according to the standard Vedic scriptures like Manusmriti and similar shastras. It is the duty of the king to rule the citizens according to Vedic principles. According to Vedic principles, society is divided into four categories: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. Chaturvarnyam, Maya Srishtam, Gunakarma, Vibhagasaha. After dividing society in this way, it is the king's duty to see that everyone executes Vedic principles according to his caste. A Brahmana must perform the duty of a Brahmana without cheating the public. It is not that one attains the name of a Brahmana without the qualifications. It is the king's duty to see that everyone engages in his occupational duty according to Vedic principles. In addition, retirement at the end of life is compulsory. Maharaja Nabi, although still a king, retired from family life and went with his wife to a place called Badrikashram in the Himalayas, where the deity Naranarayan is worshipped. The words Prasana Nipunena. Tapasa indicate that the king accepted all kinds of austerity very expertly and jubilantly. Can somebody look up the word Nipunena and give me the synonyms, please? You know how to do that in the Veda base? Depends on which Veda base you've got, but if you click on the word in vedabase.io, you'll get the synonyms. He did not at all mind leaving his comfortable life at home, although he was the emperor. Despite undergoing severe austerities and penances, he felt very pleased at Badrikashram, and he did everything there expertly. In this way, being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, samadhi yoga, always thinking of Krishna, Vasudeva, Maharaj Nabi attained success at the end of his life and was promoted to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha Loka. This is the way of Vedic life. One must stop the process of repeated birth and death and return home back to Godhead. The words Tan Mahimanam Avapa are significant in this regard. Srila Sridhar Swami says that Mahima means liberation in this life. We should act in such a way in this life that after giving up this body, we will become liberated from the bondage of repeated birth and death. This is called Jivan Mukti. Is?
Dexterity.
So that's the expert. The expert. Prasanna means happy, peaceful, right? Nipunena, expertly, tapasa. Okay. Srila Viviraghava Acharya states that in the Chandogya Upanishad there are eight symptoms of a Jivan Mukta. Okay, let's see how many of these we have, if any. The first symptom, a person who is already liberated even when living in this body. The first symptom of one so liberated is that he is freed from all sinful activity, apahata papa. As long as one is under the clutches of Maya and the material energy, one has to engage in sinful activity. Bhagavad Gita describes such people as duskritina, which indicates that they are always engaged in sinful activity. One who is liberated in this life does not commit any sinful activities. Sinful activity involves illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling. Another symptom of a liberated person is vijara, which indicates that he is not subjected to the miseries of old age, or vijara, right. Another symptom is vimrityu. A liberated person prepares himself in such a way that he does not take on any more material bodies which are destined to die. In other words, he does not fall down again to repeat birth and death. Another symptom is vishoka, which indicates that he is callous to material distress and happiness. Another is vijigatsa, which indicates that he no longer desires material enjoyment. Another symptom is apipata, which means that he has no desire other to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, his dear most pursuable Lord. A further symptom is satya kam, which indicates that all his desires are directed to the supreme truth, Krishna. He does not want anything else. He is satya sankalpa. Whatever he desires is fulfilled by the grace of Krishna. First of all, he does not desire anything for his material benefit. And secondly, if he desires anything at all, he simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord. That desire is fulfilled by the Lord's grace. That is called satya sankalpa. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the word mahima means returning to the spiritual world, back home, back to Vaikuntha. Sri Shukadev says that the word mahima means that the devotee attains the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called sadharma, or the same quality. Just as Krishna is never born and never dies, his devotees who return to Godhead never die and never take birth within the material world. Om Gyanatimirandasya Giranjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmahe Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Garim Yad kripa tamaham bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So this is a description of Maharaj Nabi. Maharaj Nabi is very auspicious, Mangala. Right, very, very auspicious personality. What are some of the features of Maharaj Nabi's auspiciousness that we've heard recently? What are some of the auspicious characteristics that make Maharaj Nabi a very special person? What's the first one? Yes, his son is a plenary expansion of the Lord. Okay, what else? Yes, the Lord appeared and blessed him that he would become his son. Yeah. What else? The Brahmanas were satisfied with him. Maharaj Nabi. Yes, I guess so. They were satisfied with, at least here it says they were satisfied with Rishabh Dev, but we could assume that since he's had the darshan of Lord Vishnu and Lord Vishnu's agreed to appear as his son, then the Brahman is probably quite happy with him, yes. What else? Yes. He was very spiritually advanced and took the responsibility of his role as a leader within society to set the example for others. Right? What else? You might have to take your mask off so I can hear what you're saying. He was engaged in austerities. He was happy to do it, yes. Very, and he, not only was he happy to do it, but he did it expertly. Was it tapasa? No, sorry, prasanna? Prasanna, so happy, satisfied, prasanna. Nipunena, expertly, tapasa, yeah. And here Prabhupada uses the word jubilantly. So when one is jubilant, that means just more than happy, pretty much in ecstasy. Okay, what else? He's a devotee. Yep. Yes, he was a devotee. Yep. What's another quality that we can see here? Jivan Mukta, yes, liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta. And then Srila Prabhupada has given, quoting Viri Raghava Acharya from the Chandogya Upanishad, he's listed 8 qualities of a Jivan Mukta. Right. 8 qualities, we'll have a look at those. But he's very detached. Yeah, right, very detached. He's not envious of the fact that his son is popular with everybody. He's thinking, great, I can leave home. Because, you know, a Kshatriya's job is always problematic. You know, management is problematic. There's always problems. The material world is designed to basically create problems, and life is a struggle for existence. You know, if you don't put the effort in, then things start falling apart. So a kshatriya, their responsibility is to make sure that things don't fall apart. Maintenance. Maintaining standards, maintaining buildings and roads and cities and, you know, all of the organization that's required in government is pretty much, you know, part of maintenance. And of course some creation as well, and maybe even some destruction as well. One has to defeat one's enemies. Right? This is a duty of a kshatriya. Somewhat opposed to the lifestyle of a devotee, in the sense that the devotee likes to be peaceful and likes to meditate on the Lord. Of course, you know, fighting. Well, anything really, even sex life. You know, Krishna says, sex life according to dharma, that I am. So all of these activities performed for Krishna's service are not actually material activities. They're actually spiritual because the focus is on pleasing Krishna. But still, we see this with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was managing ISKCON, but on one occasion he said, let me be free from this. Let me be free from this. Let me pursue my main service. And Prabhupada's main service to his spiritual master was what? Yeah. What were Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's more or less last instructions to Srila Prabhupada? Yeah, if you get money, print books. Right? And I mentioned this the other day. And Prabhupada mentions, in the Nectar of Devotion, that, opening temples is secondary to preaching or to book to distributing transcendental knowledge. But of course, Prabhupada spent a lot of his time opening temples. Right? And it's not that opening temples is not important. Of course it's important, because when you distribute books, what happens? People want somewhere to go to find out about that. They want a place to congregate. Right? And so Prabhupada understood, even though opening temples may be secondary, it also is foundational, because those locations are the places where people will congregate to have sankirtan. Just like this morning, we had some kirtan. First time I've had a good kirtan for a long time. Right? And what a pleasure. Right? What a pleasure. There's jubilation. When the devotees chant Hare Krishna, then they become jubilant. Right? Prance around like peacocks. Dance. And So Maharaj Nabi is... And here's another thing. He's having his desires fulfilled. Right? And it's coming about by Krishna's grace, by Krishna's arrangement. These things are happening with endeavor, because, if you're to be successful in pursuing your goals and fulfilling your desires, then it requires some effort. Right? But the effort expended by Maharaj Nabi was the effort that would normally be expected in the course of his duty. It wasn't over-endeavour. Some endeavour is required, but it's the endeavour that would normally be expected of a king. And as a consequence of his piety, of his elevated personality, these things came naturally to him. In other words, ordained and sanctioned by the Lord. His son, Rishabh Dev, was in a position where Maharaj Nabi could install him on the throne. And then, rather than lamenting that he's now lost his job, if you like, or lost his position, rather he embraced it and took on the life of a renunciate. This is why in Vedic culture even in modern culture, the renunciates are given respect. Right? Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, in the pastimes of Narada Muni and his conversation with Vyasadeva, Prabhupada says that all of the ashrams are equal, not that one is better than another, because in each ashram, whether it's the brahmachari ashram, the grihastha ashram, vanaprastha or sannyas, the purpose is spiritual cultivation. The purpose is to develop one's spiritual life. And so if one acts according to the principles of each of the ashrams with a focus on making spiritual advancement, that's the real purpose of the ashram. The reason why the sannyasis are given more respect is because of their renunciation. And renunciation is a measure of a person's advancement. Detachment, in other words. And attachment to serving Krishna effectively. You know, this is why service is important. You know, if a person is lazy in doing their service, that enthusiasm or that lack of enthusiasm is a measure of a person's advancement. Because if there's some lacking in enthusiasm for serving Krishna, that means that there'll be enthusiasm for doing something else. It may not be fully manifest, but it will manifest in due course. So this renunciation, especially in the latter stages of one's life, is a positive sign of spiritual advancement and a proper understanding of what the purpose of the human life is for. One may, and one definitely will, in the in one's youth, pursue activities that are natural to their, you know, to their their natural inclinations. But when one comes to the end of one's life, then it's time to turn within, focus. And in one sense, you know, the all of one's life is a preparation for that time when it's required that one meditate fully, detach oneself fully from material pursuits and focus one's attention on service to the Lord. And of course, you know, that's established through the process of sadhana bhakti and the nine processes of devotional service, ravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, etc. Right? But by the time one reaches 50, Prabhupada mentions, one should retire. I remember I used to tell my mum and dad, you know, at 50 you should retire, leave home. When I got to 50, my mum said, what are you going to do? What are you going to do now? No. So, yes, renunciation is a measure of advancement, and it should be embraced when one gets to one's latter years. The energy or the life force is not as strong, and it's a natural time to take stock and to basically detach oneself from the influence of the conditioning of material existence and be fixed in meditation on the Supreme. And that's the example that's being shown here by Maharaj Nabi. And why that renunciation is respected? Because people in Vedic culture valued spiritual advancement. You know, in modern society, people are glorified if they're very popular, if they've made a lot of money, if they're influential, if they're powerful. This is, you know, in modern existence. People are glorified if they have material facility. But in a Vedic culture, material facility is really not given much credence, because how long does it last? It's all asat, right? It's all temporary. And so, you know, being bewildered by temporary achievements, temporary acquisitions, is not, according to Vedic culture, it's not valued. interesting, maybe, but it's you know, what is it? Na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, right? Of the beginning, there's an end, right? And so one who's learned, who has knowledge, understands that, you know, material achievements, okay, all right, yeah, interesting, but not so valuable, right? And that a person who understands that and is able to detach themselves, that's real, that's somebody who understands the real values of life and the purpose of life. The purpose of life is not to accumulate, accumulate material. You know, I remember I saw a bumper sticker when I was on Sankirtan, and it said, you know, the person who accumulates the most toys wins. Right? But I think it was just a joke. Right? The person who accumulates the most toys does not win, because eventually, all taken away. So, you know, Maharaj Nabi was a very pious and accomplished king, right? Guided by the Brahmanas. His rule was successful, yet he just easily detached himself from it because he understood the real purpose of life, and he wanted to focus on that in the final stages of his existence. Yeah. Prabhupada makes an interesting point here that the purpose of the king is to engage everybody according to their varna and ashrama. Right? According to Vedic principles, so society is divided into four categories: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Sudra. After dividing society in this way, it is the king's duty to see that everyone executes Vedic principles according to his caste. Interesting, huh? Brahmana must perform the duty of a Brahmana without cheating the public. It is not that one attains the name of a Brahmana without the qualifications. This is a very consistent message in Prabhupada's teachings, right? You're only a Brahmana by qualification, not by birth. Huh? And again, it is a duty of the king to see that everyone engages in his occupational duty according to Vedic principles. But we have a problem in the Kali Yuga because we see everybody so mixed up. How do we work out what caste they are? Right? And then we have the statement, Kalo Sudra Sambhava, you know, Shastric statement. Everybody's a Sudra in the age of Kali. So this is a challenge. How do we apply this? How do we apply this? Of course, we're not the kings. So perhaps it's not our business to worry about too much. We should concentrate on our own duty, if you like, and take the naturally acquired propensities that we have and use them in Krishna's service. This is probably the easiest way to apply Varnashram. Otherwise, you know, how many Brahmanas do we find in society today when you think about it? How many are there? Many? Many? No, not many at all. Kshatriyas? According to Vedic principles? It's a challenge. It's a challenge. The GBC are discussing this point. The Org Dev Committee and GBC are discussing this point. What do we do with Varna and Ashrama? What do we do with it? What does it mean? Right? Because Prabhupada says it. How often does Prabhupada make this statement in his books? A lot, right? A lot. But then how do we apply it? In fact, there are places where Prabhupada says you can't do it. Not only does Prabhupada say that we should do it, but he also says you can't do it. Right? So what's that called? What's that called? A contradiction. Let's not say a contradiction. Let's say a conundrum. Conundrum. Yeah. Challenging. It's a challenge. And why... Even Lord Chaitanya more or less says the same thing. Very difficult. And so why, you know, an expert guru, expert spiritual master, teacher, and you know, that's what we aspire to be. We aspire to be, you know, when you become a member of the Hare Krishna movement, then effectively you're aspiring to become a guru. Right? Did you know that? Yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Right? We're told, become a guru. That means one has to identify the characteristics of a person and then engage them in Krishna's service accordingly. Well, that's really one of the... Prabhupada says the guru is able to measure up the psychophysical characteristics of a disciple. And then engage those propensities, natural propensities that a person has in Krishna's service. So, if the Varnashram characteristics are present within everybody, we should be able to see them. If we know what the qualifications are, then we should be able to look at a person and identify, here's what characteristics this person has. You know? We should be able to do that. It's not that difficult, really. And then, but what we see is mixed up. Right? Mixed up. In some cases. In some cases, terribly confused. Right? People terribly confused. And, you know, to try and work them out, it's just like, whew, almost impossible. Because that's just the nature of Kali. You know, there are just, what is it? Hi upadrutaha. What's that verse? Prayena, what is it? I can't remember the verse, but I can remember the word. Hi upadrutaha, which means always disturbed, right? This is a Kali Yuga, always disturbed. So, what we do, in the process of bhakti, which transcends all of these characteristics, all of these classifications, by the way, we focus first and foremost on the soul, on the spirit. The spirit soul, that's what we concentrate on. And we get the devotees, basically chant Hare Krishna and follow the process of sadhana bhakti, which is an automatic elevation to the platform of a brahmana, right? Well, actually a Vaishnava, not a brahmana. One of the reasons why we give the brahminical initiation to the devotees is not because they become brahmanas. No? Not that they become brahmanas, but rather they're Vaishnavas. And the Vaishnava automatically has all of the qualifications of a brahmana, so that's why the brahman thread is given to a Vaishnava. Right? And so whether we're Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya or Brahmana, right? Whether we show any of those qualities, the process of sadhana bhakti automatically elevates one to the platform of goodness. And we see it. Rise early in the morning. Right? Mongol Artik. Worship Lord Nisringadeva. Well, worship the spiritual master. Worship Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Balaram, Lord Jagannath Balaram Subhadra. Worship the Lord Nisringadeva. Worship Tulsi. These activities of a Vaishnava are automatically in the mode of goodness. So they automatically elevate us. Then what do we do? For 2 hours, what do we do? Chant Hare Krishna. Right? This is all brahminical activity. Why not all devotees can do it, actually, because it's so elevated that it's difficult sometimes for the devotees to stick at that. So, you know, the first principle, and Lord Chaitanya makes this statement, you know, I'm not a kshatriya, sannyasi, brahmana. I'm a gopi bhatu pada kamalayo dasa dasa anadas, right? So the process of sadhana bhakti actually elevates a person to the mode of goodness. But in the process, that purification and that regulation, that sadhana process purifies the individual and makes it easier for us to identify our natural propensities, right, based on our material conditioning. And so it's easier then to identify what the natural characteristics of the individual are. You know, so we have a morning program and ideally an evening program, which reveals the spiritual identity, but it also, in the purificatory process, it also helps us to identify the natural material propensities or proclivities of the individual. It just happens naturally. And so then we're able to engage people according to those natural propensities. So anyway, establishing the Varnashram or Vedic principles, right, is the duty of a king. So he was doing that. But then, of course, in the latter stages of his life, he entered into the renounced order effectively. And interesting here, and even though in the renounced order, he and his wife went to Badrika Ashram. So here's an example of a very advanced king, but he didn't necessarily leave home without his wife. He and his wife, as a partnership, right, both left. So this is also an option. And even though he left with his wife to go to Badrika Ashram, he, and you can assume her as well, are described as Jivan Mukta. Well, pretty amazing when you think about it. Jivan Mukta. And so what does that mean? Free from all sinful activities. Apahata papa. Vijara. Not subjected to the miseries of old age. Looks like I missed out on that one. Vijara. Then, what else? No more death. Well, a change of body in this lifetime, but no more birth. Vijighatsa. No longer desires material enjoyment. We can see that because he's very happy to take on the austerities of living in Badrika Ashram. And expert and happy. What else we got here? Apipata. Only wants to engage in devotional service. Satyakam. All of his desires are directed to the supreme truth. Satya Sankalpa. Whatever he desires is fulfilled by the grace of Krishna. Satya sankalpa. And mahima. Mahima means returning to the spiritual world, back home, back to Vaikuntha. So if we could be as fortunate as Maharaj Nabi to be endowed with these characteristics, we could consider our lives to be successful. Return back home, back to Godhead, Sadharma, the same quality as Krishna. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions at this point? Priya.
When Prabhupada said that Varnashrama should be introduced, I always wondered whether it was in conjunction with mainstream society or not.
In what?
Whether it includes mainstream society.
Or whether Prabhupada's just referring to the ISKCON society. I think Prabhupada's making generalized statements here that are meant for everybody. That's my understanding. So they can be applied in both places.
So if we were to start implementing it on the GPC, we would have to be
within ISKCON. Well, otherwise, we don't have any control over what other people do. We don't even have control over people in ISKCON. That's why education and training is so important. Right. Yesterday we had a meeting with the most of the congregational leaders of ISKCON Melbourne. And one of the goals of that group, or one of the purpose of meeting with that group, is so that we can have a... a consistency, a standard of training and education that's consistent throughout our community, ISKCON community. And actually, you know, we never mentioned Varnashram, did we? No. But we're talking about systematically training the devotees so that they become Vaishnavas. That's really what we focus on. That's what Prabhupada focused on. And what we want to do is create preachers, which means effectively we're creating brahmanas. And in fact, Prabhupada does say that that's what ISKCON is meant to do, is to create brahmanas, right? In other words, people in the mode of goodness. People like Maharaj Nabi, actually, detached and willing to train and educate others. And you know, we generally let those, because those qualities are natural to everyone, and everybody has, you know, a certain mix of these modes, then that process that I mentioned, where we generally encourage the self-realization first, along with self-realization comes the understanding of a person's identity from the material perspective, their varna and their ashram. What ashram are most people in? What ashram are most people in?
Householder.
Yeah, householder. Householders. How can you tell? How do you tell?
It's obvious.
They're married. They've got kids. They're working hard. Right? They're working hard, very hard. You working hard, Sri Chaitanya?
Sometimes.
He's a very relaxed character, very relaxed person, right? Easygoing. It's hard to ruffle Sri Chaitanya's feathers. You can do it, though. I'm sure you can do it. So, so it is interesting, actually, that even though Srila Prabhupada does mention that we should establish Varnashrama, you know, he didn't really do it. He made some statements, yes, but he concentrated more on creating Vaishnavas than anything else, right, when you think about it. And, you know, there are devotees who say, but you won't find this really noted anywhere of consistent, that, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, only half of my work has been done. There's that. It's attributed to maybe one or two quotations, but you won't find that consistently in Prabhupada's teachings. And if you look at what Prabhupada did, he concentrated on making Vaishnavas. Then naturally, you know, the natural propensities of an individual come out because they're already there. They're in the individual, and so you engage them then accordingly. And, you know, there are some real problems with establishing a caste system anywhere, right? The brahmanas will be considered the head, and then have a guess what they'll want to do. Huh? They want to tell everybody what to do. We know that. We have devotees in ISKCON who promote themselves as brahmanas. I'm a brahmana. Me first. I should be at the head of the queue. You should feed me first. Huh? And that's why Prabhupada says brahmanas shouldn't cheat. Right? They should be qualified, not cheat. I remember when first time we went to India on a pilgrimage to Mayapur and Vrindavan and Puri. We stayed in the Silver Sands Resort in Mahabalipuram, which was beautiful then too, by the way. The waves were just incredible. I woke up and all the devotees were swimming and surfing and having a great time. I thought, oh, you guys are all in Maya. but it was very pleasant. And the devotees were very particular about the meals, you know. And so I think Korma had gone to the kitchen of this resort and was grilling, you know, the managers. Is the cook a brahmana? Oh, we've got a brahmana cook. Right? And just to show us that the cook was a brahmana, he had his lungi on and his singlet on, and on the top of his singlet he had his brahman thread. So, oh, he's a brahmana, great, okay. So, yeah. And you know, the other issue with the caste system is, you know, what do we do with the women? You know, the women are a special category, which usually means after the sudras, right? So it's problematic, to say the least. And so that's why, you know, Prabhupada really didn't, you know, when you think about it, he operated on the Jivan Mukta platform. You're a Vaishnava, you're liberated. Right? And there are so many statements to that effect in the Shastra, when you think about it. And if you look at what Srila Prabhupada said and then what he did, and his focus was creating brahmanas effectively, but Vaishnavas first. The brahmanical part came later. So chant Hare Krishna, worship the deity, you know, hear and chant Hare Krishna, study the Shastra, all brahminical, these are all brahminical activities. when you think about it. And then in the daytime, then what do? Then that's when we exercise our natural propensities. IT waller, maintenance man, preacher, pot washer, whatever. He's actually a teacher too. He's a brahmana. There's a brahmana over there. If you want to look at a brahmana, there's one. That's his natural propensity. Right? And be organized. Right? Brahmanas also, you know, the brahmanas want things to be organized, therefore they tell the kshatriyas who have got the kshatriyas have got the you know, the audacity probably to get up and tell people what to do. A wise man knows that you don't tell anybody what to do, because if it goes wrong, they'll come back and blame you. But a kshatriya is, you know, so full of himself that he knows what's right. But if he's guided by the brahmanas, right, this is why it's so important to have that brahminical head, right? And why, this is why Prabhupada focused on that, because that was what the need of society is to have somebody who knows what should be done, how things should be ordered. And that's why concentrated on the elevating people to the spiritual platform, then automatically out of those individuals, a class of actual brahmanas would be manifest who could then tell everybody else what to do. Right? So in that way, Prabhupada was establishing Varnashram. Does that make sense? That's what Prabhupada did. He wanted to establish the head of society, because, you know, at the moment doesn't have a head. When you think about it, plenty of arms and legs and bellies, but just basically drongos. And so the real, and of course, then that's the importance of education and training within ISKCON. And training everybody at least in a culture of a Vaishnav culture, because inherent within Vaishnav culture is already Brahminical culture. And then within that, the natural propensities and tendencies of the individuals could be engaged, because first of all, they know I'm not the body. Right? I'm not the body. That's the first. And you know, that's like Hare Krishna 101 or Hare Krishna, you know, infant school. You're not the body. That's the first principle. And so, you know, if we can encourage people to come to that platform, and it's very easy. What is it? Pratyakshavagamam damyam susukam kartam avyayam. What's the first line of that verse? Rajavidya, the king of knowledge. Rajaguyam, the king of esoterica, if you like. The most esoteric understanding is you're not the body. And if you can come to that platform, you've got all, everything else can be easily embraced. And it's so easy when you think about it. When you chant Hare Krishna, it's directly perceived. Right? That's why when we're chanting Hare Krishna in a kirtan, in a sankirtan, then we become ecstatic. Why is that? Because that's the natural condition of the living entity, is to be happy and to dance. And we see that in the Brahma Samhita. Every step is a dance, every word is a song in the spiritual world. And so, you know, and you know, it's very interesting, because it's for everybody, whether you're a sudra, whether you're a vaishya, whether you're a kshatriya, whether you're a brahmana. When you realize that you're not the body, which is the goal of life anyway, you become super happy. Okay. Anything else?
Understand the principle of education and understanding that you are not the body,
that's self-realization on the material and on the spiritual platform. Practical. Yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah. By being able to identify one's natural propensities, we can then use them properly. And you know, this is a very common challenge for people, is to work out their identity at, you know, the beginning of youth. Who am I? What am I supposed to do with my life? This is very common, you know, for all of us at 15, 16, 17. One is starting to become aware of the samskaras of the previous life. And so the desires start manifesting. We start thinking, oh, what about this? What about all sorts of odd stuff? Resurfaces. When we're in childhood, We don't, our past karmas are working, you know, on us, or we're experiencing the consequences of our past activities. But things really start, you know, by the time we're 22 or 23 or 25 or whatever, then the full force of our past karma really hits us, right? And at that time, we're trying to work out, what am I supposed to do? Who am I? What is my purpose in life? And that can be terribly bewildering if one is just subject to the influences of our past karma. Whereas if we add the process of sadhana bhakti, bhakti yoga, buddhi yoga, Prabhupada calls it, then that purification of the heart and the purification of the, the physical elements helps us see through it and realize our spiritual identity and what our purpose is, what we should be doing. But for a lot of people, that doesn't happen. You know, they're just pushed by the modes of material nature. Yes, 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 that's a good point. Yes. Yep. Ideally, yes. But there's this misconception that a Brahmana is better than a Sudra, whereas most people are Sudras anyway, or less. Or they're just confused. They're just mixed up, confused. Right? Yeah, that's why vana and ashrama are a problem, because it's a material conception of existence. And it, in order to be understood properly, it needs the understanding of one's spiritual identity first, and that one may be carrying the trappings of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, but all, whatever those propensities are, they should be engaged for one purpose. And if all it is, or not all it is, but if you have the propensities to act in a particular way, and that may be mixed, it should be, that particular way should be in a devotional way. Yes. Yeah, it's complicated, which is probably, you know, why Prabhupada focused on the basics. you know, beyond the Lord Chaitanya's teachings. And Lord Chaitanya actually, you know, elevated everybody. It doesn't matter. Vaisho Sudra, this one or that one, doesn't matter. Chan Hare Krishna, all be Jivan Mukta. Right? And the Brahmanas didn't like that. Right? The Brahmanas didn't like it because it dislodged them from their position of superiority. Yes, interesting. Okay, I think we should finish here. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.